Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We start another season. It's my 16th season covering the NBA. Getting old. Gray hairs are coming in. Joining us from Boston.
I'm just going to blow you away on this one. Wait a minute.
Jackie, 16? I was setting you up. Go ahead. I'm not bragging. I'm just, I'm lamenting, actually. Jackie McMullen.
15. So I've been working in the journalism since 1982. Probably got a sniff of my first finals in 1980. I did not do the 84 finals, sad to say, 85. So do the math, dude, and sit right down. I don't want to hear about the gray hairs, okay? That's all I'm going to say.
Okay, so it's a couple of seasons for Jackie Mack. And then through the magic of technology, joining us from Shanghai, China, is Tim McMahon. Tim, first off, what season is this of you covering the NBA, and what the heck is going on in China?
Well, they play little preseason games over here, little Mavs-Sixers action. So, going to be interesting here. I've learned a little bit of Chinese so far. I can say thank you in Chinese, xixi, that's about it.
What about ni hao?
What's ni hao? Is that hello?
I believe so.
Okay, I've heard ni hao. Oh, ni hao. Muy bien, gracias.
That was Andrew Han from Los Angeles.
Yes, that's Andrew the Han.
Ni hao.
Andrew the Hammer Han, as he likes to be called now. my first taste of it was the Mavs 06 run to the finals, and then I've kind of been bouncing between Cowboys and NBA since then. I am full-time NBA and full blast now and have been for a handful of years and am just thrilled to be the Dennis Rodman of this podcast.
Tim, this is what's important to me. What are you eating in China?
Well, interesting that you ask. I won't say who, but a dignified source took me out to lunch today. And we went to the Hooters in Shanghai. And actually, all they had was American Express, so I ended up having to expense the thing. So, and the Hooters in Shanghai, the Baja Shrimp
Tacos. What do you order at the, there you go.
Well, I got Baja Shrimp Tacos, and they put the hard shell inside the soft shell, which was pretty confusing. And then tonight, my good friends, Sean Ping and, gosh, I don't want to mispronounce her name, but another one of our great colleagues at Tencent actually took me out to a nice Chinese dinner where, you know, we had a whole buffet type of thing going on. So I did actually get a little bit of Chinese culture today, just not at the Hooters.
I was in Shanghai during Yao Ming's rookie year in the NBA, and the Boston Globe had gobs of money, and they sent me over to China to do the year after Yao. And I covered the Shanghai Sharks' first game without Yao. It was in the dead of winter. It was freezing. And the only good thing that happened was I went to this marvelous restaurant called M on the Bund, which is supposed to be the most elegant restaurant in Shanghai. And it cost my father, Fred, and me $23 American each. And I'm telling you,
no, it's crazy how cheap food is here.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
What'd you get, Jackie?
We got scorpion because we had to. We had all sorts of things I'd never heard of. What we really did was just said to the waiter, give us everything you think we should have. And he did. And we drank some very good wine. And it was European wine. It was not Chinese wine. I don't even know if there's such a thing as Chinese wine. But I think I've told you guys this story before. The most amazing thing to me about Shanghai was the Shanghai Sharks played in the dead of winter with no heat in the gym, the doors wide open because they all chain smoke, and the players wore winter parkas on the bench. I'm not making this up. True story.
I spent 3 weeks in Japan covering the World Championships in 2006, and some of my Japanese reporter friends took me to a restaurant and showed me where to point on the menu for things that I wanted. And so I just had, and this is before smartphones. If I had the iPhone, things would have gone a lot better. But basically, I survived off breakfast because at the hotel you could get eggs and bacon for breakfast. Although the Japanese don't like to cook anything for too long, so I had to learn the the word for well done eggs early. I think I still remember it. Katameni. Katameni. I would say katameni. And because basically their well done eggs was our just done eggs, you know. And otherwise it'd just be all runny. And then I just, it was just one restaurant where there was three different things that I rotated through over the course of the days. And back when as you said, Jackie, the Globe had gobs of money, Bob Ryan came over, and right as we got to Tokyo, and Bob Ryan and I had our first meal in Tokyo at TGI Fridays, which after,
what is wrong with you people? Now, we do need to tell everyone, don't we, Tim, about Brian's ridiculous eating habits. So we had our NBA summit in LA recently. We went to Korean barbecue, and there was nary a thing on the grill that our friend Mr. Windhorse would eat. He ate the beef, right? Was that it, Brian?
We had some fantastic squid
that you wouldn't touch.
Jackie was determined to get the squid. She kept ordering it over and over.
I definitely ate the squid. I will say I was a little bit intimidated by the head.
Oh, it's so good when it's grilled like that. Delicious. But I did have to order it three times. Brian is right about that.
It is Andrew. Andrew Hahn was the one who set this up. And basically, there was all this stuff on the table, and I didn't touch any of it. I just took the steak that was on the grill, put it on my plate, and ate it. That's how I...
That was pretty
good. But you'll eat at TGIF's...
In Japan. He claimed he was going to go for another meal, which turned out to be a false claim, I might add.
Well, I wasn't sure I could eat anything, but I ended up getting enough steak. It was fine.
Well, listen, it was very much an Andrew the Hammer Hahn hipster place. There's no doubt about that.
I loved
yes.
it.
Not so
great.
Much as
you did.
Not,
you did it was, love it, Jackie. Nice, you were very happy.
Not so much as
I was happy.
Like the
was
bar afterward was hipster on steroids.
That was. That was like we were in like a time warp, like a Mad Men episode. That's where we were.
So today, guys, because we do talk about the NBA, today the GM survey came out. Mm-hmm. By the way, today is relative because it's almost midnight where McMahon is. It's morning.
I just had some coffee, though, so I could stay up and pod with you guys.
He's hoping to get to Hooters for last call. Give me a break.
No. That would be my only trip to Hooters in Shanghai. I'm not even a fan of Hooters in America.
God bless you.
Yeah,
Tim.
So you say. So you guys, you saw the GM survey. This is an interesting day every year. What did you guys think of it? Anything that stuck out to you?
One thing that really stood out to me, there's some Jazz and Gobert things that stood out to me, but the thing that I think had the most sizzle was the fact that Karl Anthony Towns went from number one last year in terms of players that a player their GM would want to sign to build a franchise around to not getting a single vote.
That's right.
And that's pretty fascinating given the fact that Jimmy Butler can't wait to jump off that boat and all the Towns, Tibbs,
and
drama,
that they just gave him $180 million.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so they gave him $180 million. You know what? If Towns is my second or third best player, I'd love him. To build a franchise around, I would be terrified because I don't want him being the culture setter, and as soon as Butler's gone, whether he's traded or just, you know, whatever he's doing now, I don't want Kat being the culture setter for my franchise.
Well,
the people
Giannis,
I talked to who've been around him.
Giannis, by the way, replaced him as number one.
Right, which is a good choice. It's a good choice. But I just think that everybody in Minnesota has suffered from this debacle. Everybody's reputation. Jimmy Butler at the front. Certainly Tom Thibodeau, certainly Karl Anthony Towns, and Andrew Wiggins and his brother have not fared well either. There's nobody, and the other funny thing, the other like subset of this is like, they keep talking about, we can't even get rid of Gorgie Dieng, and I'm like, oh, come on, leave him alone. What did he do wrong?
That's the least of the problems.
That's such a cheap shot. Yeah, such a cheap shot.
Yeah, all he did was sign the contract he put in front of him. And by the way, if you're trying to unload bad contracts, put Butler's buddy Andrew Wiggins on it, you know, try to make him part of the deal because that's the worst contract that they have.
By the way, Jackie allegedly isn't on social media, yet she seemed to be very well aware of Andrew Wiggins' brother social media activity there just a second ago.
Okay, well, she doesn't I'm telling you, Brian, it's part of my job. It's not, yeah, it's part of my job, Brian. I do have children in their 20s. that keep me abreast of these things. Yeah. So
plus, Jack is a big deal. She's got an army of producers who keep her abreast of things. You ought to be able to relate to that, Hollywood.
All right. Now, what are you talking about? The only producer I know of that I have is Andrew the Hahn, who, you know,
well, the hammer's
really
pretty damn good.
He's on the West Coast. He does keep me abreast of things. He got me on this beautiful medium that we're using today to record this podcast, which I appreciate because had I had to do it myself, you'd still be waiting for me. So I'm very appreciative of Andrew.
Jackie, you
Andrew
mentioned
the Hammer Hahn. You got the Jump folks. You got the Around the Horn people. I mean,
Jackie is just finishing with a book tour. You know, you're still on it,
basketball, a love story. Yes,
basketball, a love story. Which to me is just first off, there's some incredible stories in there. Secondly, the amount of work that had to go into this because it's an oral history, and oral histories. I've done a couple of them. Nothing anywhere near this length. They are so energy zapping and time consuming. So just the amount of work you put into this, Jackie.
Right. Well, not alone, as you know. My friend Rafe Bartholomew, my new close, great, bestest friend, Rafe Bartholomew, who I did know before we...
He outranks us.
Well, he might at the moment because we both went through this very painful process together. And he's such a star. And I had so much fun working with him. And he's kind of an editor at heart, too. So I had never done an oral history of any kind. Never once. So to jump into this for me was difficult. And it took me a while to get the hang of it. There's all this information. That's the biggest thing that took so long was all these amazing interviews that Dan Cloris, the filmmaker, had arranged. You know, this started.
Yeah, this is sort of the side project with what is the official name of the documentary?
The same thing, basketball.
Oh, it's the same basketball love story.
Same thing.
All right.
Now I will tell you this: it's a funny thing how this turned out. But the book and the film are actually quite different. Because there was so much material. And Dan did just a masterful job with the film. I would recommend everybody to go. One of my favorites is The Last Day of the Season, David Thompson, George Gervin, fighting for the scoring title. Mm-hmm. You guys know that story. I won't bore everybody with it. But he did it in animation because there was no footage available.
Oh, man.
Brilliant.
Wow.
It's just brilliant. So there's so many great things about this film. But because it's a film, if there's a gap... You play music and you cut away. You have beautiful visual things that are going on.
Right.
In an oral history, you're a little more, you know, it's a little more difficult. So some of the things we had to pass on because they just would have been too hard to put into oral history form. For instance, one of the other great things in the film, and it's just a wonderful story, a very human story about Maury Stokes and Jack Twynham. Maury Stokes, you know, became paralyzed overnight. His teammate Jack Twynham, not particularly close, ends up caring for him. Up until his, you know, very untimely death. It's a wonderful story. I can go on all day, but
the
teammate
of the year award
is
named after them now. The Stokes Twyman teammate award,
right?
Yeah.
As it should be. But we did some other little things that you know I enjoyed. But just boiling down the information. Oscar Robertson's interview was 5 hours long. Russell's was over 2.5 hours. So, but you know, I liked
Russell doesn't give anybody interviews.
Well, this is it. It was great. It was great.
There's only one Jackie Mack.
Well, I did not do the Russell interview. I did not do that interview. So I don't want to take credit for that. I will tell you that, you know, when I first saw some of the transcripts, one of the guys was Ahmad Rashard. And I'm thinking, well, why are we doing Ahmad Rashard? Are you kidding me? That guy is a star. And, he was so close to Magic, very, very close to Michael, one of Michael's best friends. And he came up with one of the best things in the book and in the film, I thought. And that was... He was standing there with Jordan, and someone asked him, okay, Michael, come on, tell us the truth. Who's better, Kobe or LeBron? And he, without missing a beat, said, Kevin Durant.
I think Durant's one of the greatest players of all time. I keep having to fight that fight with people at our own company, but that's a different topic for a different day.
I agree with you.
Please check out Basketball Love Stories, both projects, but Jackie's book especially.
Thanks for the shameless plug. Amazon.com, people.
Yes, it's beautiful. But Jackie, you were mentioning a little bit
ago.
It is
my reading on my long flights.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, gosh. You poor thing.
How was the flight?
You know what? My back is not cut out for 15 hours in coach. It's just not. So well, the reading was great. The rest of it sucked.
So did you not get on the Mavericks team plane, which was on social media? And
no, but it was, yeah. Everybody I talked to that was on there says it was the most unbelievable. I mean, it was basically like a flying club. Matter of fact, I guess that plane is going to be used as a flying casino.
So just to be real clear on this, it's not the Mavericks team plane that they use every day during right. the season, although among the team planes, the Mavericks might have the best team plane. And Mark Cuban, you know, I know Mark Cuban's gone through a tough time recently, but just as a reminder, and now to pimp one of McMahon's work, McMahon just recently had a story about J.J. Barea and his help in Puerto Rico following the hurricane last year. Hurricane Maria, am I right? Was that the correct hurricane?
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that JJ did was collect supplies, and Cuban let him have the plane, I think, 5 flights to Puerto Rico and back.
Right. And we all knew that he went down there the first time. You know, he missed the first practice and training camp, and they, you know, like I said, they loaded it with all kinds of supplies. Him, his wife, a bunch of several of his friends flew it down there, were able to bring, you know, family and some people who needed to get back, you know, to get to America. Back on that, what I didn't know until I went down there to work in the story is they used that plane 4 more times, and it was his right. wife, Viviana Ortiz, who ran point on all those. She was the one person who made all 5 trips. Jose Juan is a charming fellow, and he certainly has a type. But Viviana's a former Miss Puerto Rico.
Did you hear how artfully he said that, Jackie?
Yes, he has a type. I was very well done. I was waiting.
Yes.
You know, I mean,
she's an unbelievable
Miss Universe,
singer.
Miss Puerto Rico. It's like potatoes, tomatoes. Let's call them
right.
all.
Yes,
both.
I'm
like,
so sorry.
Okay?
Right.
Yeah. It's like all-star versus MVP type of thing. But hey, Viviana will get my MVP vote. She's unbelievable.
All right. Well, anyway, that was a good story.
And I was able to witness her singing karaoke, and her sister's an opera singer. She's a former Miss Puerto Rico. I mean, and it was concert quality. Made the cut in the story.
So Mark Cuban, I mean, just flying that plane to and from Puerto Rico 5 times, forget about the supplies that they put on it, was an incredible charitable gift that Cuban did. So not saying anything about anything else, but certainly that should not be ignored. And but the Mavericks have, I think, if not the largest, one of the largest team planes out there, and so they have a luxurious plane anyway, but they chartered a special luxurious plane that I think is basically used by royal families from the Mideast.
Yes.
When it's not being used by NBA teams.
Right. And this was, like I said, it's a 15-hour flight from Dallas to Shanghai. And I was told that plane runs $50,000 an hour.
I believe it.
Wow.
I believe it. So, but anyway, before we talk about the GM survey, Jackie, you mentioned the thing you were surprised about was the how do they title it? The breakout player?
Right. Jamal Murray, 20% of GMs. Yeah.
And Jamal Murray from the Nuggets.
Right. And I like Jamal Murray a lot. And I agree that he has a chance to be a breakout player. But I was just thinking about some of the other choices. You know, Ben Simmons, Jason Tatum here in Boston, who I think is going to be, I mean, just in the short time I've been watching him already. Man, he is just the complete package. In fact, I'm finishing up a Jason Tatum story, and I was short on time, so I had to ask Ty Lue in front of everybody last night before the Celtics.
I saw the quote.
Game.
I'm so sorry that now everybody knows the quote now.
Yeah, it's okay though. I'm almost over it because it gave the context that the story needed, which is this kid has no ceiling, is what Ty said. He also said there isn't a skill he can't do. He's a complete player offensively already at the age of 20. So,
well, he finished second in the voting.
Right, as he should. But Jamal Murray, I don't know, was that surprising to you guys?
Well, I would argue that Tatum has had his breakout, and obviously he had a great rookie year, but I feel like his breakout happened during the playoffs. Like, he established
especially game 7. Yeah, and game 7.
Yeah, he established himself as a bona fide star during the playoffs. I feel like Simmons, I mean, he's rookie of the year. I feel like he's an established star, where Murray is a good young player. But like, when you talk about Like, he doesn't even come up in conversations about potential all-stars. And so if he can get into that category, then he would be. And Brandon Ingram's an interesting one, too, because I feel like he we've kind of been teased with his potential but haven't seen it. But I also feel like the fit with LeBron and him is going to be very interesting because he's at his best kind of as that point forward.
Andrew Hahn, if you don't mind, could you pull up our NBA rank and tell me where Murray ranked? Because if I'm not mistaken, he did perform relatively well in our NBA rank.
You know what made me think of this was just Jokic, I believe, was 12, right?
12 Jokic in our NBA 12, rank? Or
something like that.
Yep.
And Jamal Murray is 45.
So kinda, I thought look it was kind of high.
But, like, expectations for the Denver Nuggets, my friends. Like, start ramping them up.
They can't miss the playoffs again.
They surely cannot.
And look, they were obviously just right knocking on the door last year and lost in game 82. They've gotten incrementally better each year under Malone, but it's time, with that young core that's got enough season now to where if they're not a playoff team, then that's a problem.
And aren't you dying to see how Isaiah Thomas fits into all this? Truly.
I mean, if he gives them anything, it's a huge bonus. I don't know what you can expect from him coming off this hip injury, and the hip surgery, not only the injury, but surgery. But, Brian,
to me, he can do it. It's just, do you want him to? I mean, he can dominate the ball and hit threes, but is that what you really want when you have these two players?
You know what I want
him
to be? I want him to be Nick Van Exel. I want him to be that gunning sixth man off the bench that's your role. You're going to come in and you're going to play 25 minutes and, green light, but he's not, Celtics MVP candidate forget that. That's done. Right. His goal, if anything, at this point, obviously he's got money motivations to get paid, but his goal ought to be sixth man of the year. And how he embraces that role is going to be really, and then obviously he's held, how healthy is he? But how he embraces that role, I think, is going to have a lot to do with how successful he is and whether he's a help or a hindrance to the Nuggets.
Right, yeah, and that's why I bring it up, though, Tim, is because he can be fantastic, but when things don't go his way, he can be difficult.
Mm-hmm. And the thing with Denver, like Melo with the Rockets, and go back to the Nuggets, but just that former superstar. Are you going to embrace the role or are you going to kind of pout in it?
Right. So the when you talk about Melo and Isaiah, the thing that's interesting with them is that the way they're viewed on their teams is completely different now. When Isaiah was in Cleveland, he was viewed as the Kyrie replacement. When he was in Boston, he was viewed as the best player. Fair, true, but that's what he was viewed as. Carmelo, even when he was traded into Oklahoma City, was viewed as one of the big three. Now they are both minimum players.
Although Melo's still getting max salary.
I know it's somewhat circumstantial that he's a minimum player, but still, a minimum player is a minimum player, and he's a minimum player for a reason. Both of them are. And so sometimes I always, because I grew up with this, in my youth, Danny Ferry got traded to the Cavs for Ron Harper. He was called by some the next Larry Bird. He signed a 10-year contract where he made 10 years, $30 million, made $3 million a year. People were horrified about Danny Ferry for a whole decade. He played all 10 years in Cleveland, and people felt he was a big failure. He went to San Antonio after finishing his 10th year in Cleveland. He made the exact same salary, $3 million. Because then that was what a role player made. And he was like this, stretching floor big man who ended up playing a role in the championship team who was viewed as an invaluable player off the bench. And he was the exact same player as he was in Cleveland. Yeah. But the circumstances of him on the team were different. And so he was viewed differently. So that's a window for Isaiah and for Carmelo to maybe thrive in. The only thing I'll say about the Nuggets before we move on, the only thing ever holding them back is their defense. Even in these two exhibition games against the Lakers, which I have watched, what Jokic did to poor JaVale McGee was, you could have charged him with a crime. He absolutely embarrassed him over and over. For a while yesterday in the first half, the Lakers, they're trying Kyle Kuzma at center, which I think is a laughable experiment.
LeBron.
I hear you, LeBron bud. You're going to have to play center. That's got to be your role, buddy.
Too bad, the boy.
So, but they're going to have to drag him into it, and this is how they're going to do it. They're going to, you know, and there was a possession
by failing where, early.
There was a possession where Kuzma was on Jokic, and it was like Jokic was, you know, it was like me against my 10-month-old son. I mean, it was just no chance for Kyle Kuzma. It was a 3-point play, and Jokic could have done it three more times if he wanted to. But the only thing holding them back is that they can't stop anybody.
I don't think you can even score on your 10-month-old son. I come up with a better example than that. You can't get buckets in an empty gym.
That may be true, but that's what's holding the Nuggets back is can they stop anybody? And Isaiah's not going to help them on that front. But
My lunch date, who will remain anonymous due to the venue. You know, we were talking, just kind of bounced around about different teams, and you know, we were talking about Denver's defense. And you know, obviously Jokic is always going to be challenged on that in the floor, but you know, his point was, man, Murray and Harris have stopper potential. They just haven't, you know, you haven't seen it yet. He feels like those two guys could be, you know, if not elite, really, really, really good defensive guards. And that's what has to happen for the Nuggets to, you know, become, for the defensive end of the floor, not to be, you know, their Achilles heel.
So one of the question that sort of made me raise my eyebrows in the GM survey, and I mean, I don't know how many of the general managers are filling this out or whether it's their assistant GMs or whatever, but it's the way front offices view their fellow front offices. So which team made the best overall move this offseason?
Yeah.
The Lakers get 70%, and it's moves plural. You know, the Lakers have to own the risks that they made. Now, maybe Lance and JaVale will work out beautifully, and Beasley, who they paid more than the minimum, which that still stuns me to this moment. The Lakers get 70% of the vote. I was kind of surprised. Toronto got 20% second, you know, the Kawhi move being the primary one, I suppose. But are you surprised the Lakers get 70% of the vote as the best moves? I mean, I was like, okay.
No.
I guess LeBron wins it out, I guess.
Yeah, it's because LeBron. It's all LeBron. Like, you know, it's funny, the GMs, when you talk to them and you talk about what's going on in the league, they're just like, well, it all comes back to LeBron. That's what everybody says every time. It all comes back to LeBron. So people get on us for that? Are you kidding me? I think the GMs are worse.
Well, when a guy goes to 8 straight finals, you know, that's a pretty impactful move.
Totally get it. He shifts the culture, shifts the whole, wherever he goes, everything shifts. I was thinking about this last night as I'm watching Kyle Korver, for instance, one of the greatest guys ever, right? He's playing in purgatory in Atlanta. He gets traded to a contender, playing alongside LeBron James. It's like perfect for his game. He helps LeBron, LeBron helps him, and now he's gone, and here's Kyle Korver back on a team that's like Atlanta all over again, you know?
But you know,
getting
a Wiggins
point. Changes.
Yeah, but you know, the guys they brought in, Kyle Korver is one of the best shooters we've ever seen, and that's a guy who fits so well with LeBron. Rondo's not a shooter. JaVale McGee, okay, you know, he fits as in terms of a lob threat, but he's a complete knucklehead. If LeBron's value and IQ, how does that work? Lance Stevenson's not a shooter and is a knucklehead. Beasley's got certainly a knucklehead rep and is not exactly a spot-up guy. He's a guy who needs the ball. So, but what they did, though, was they got the best player in the world, and they gave out a bunch of one-year deals, whether they fit or not. So they got the best player in the world, and it's a year-long recruiting pitch to every other free agent who's going to be there. Having said that, I do think it's interesting that you're hearing this buzz about, you know, Butler's got his list of teams. The Lakers aren't on it. You know, Kawhi would rather play with the Clippers. You know, he's not so sure about wanting to play with LeBron. And
I don't know how much you can believe anything about Kawhi, but I mean, you know, I could see him going to the Clippers. I could see that.
Yeah, but that's interesting to me. Like, is it because they want to be, you know, the alpha males on their team? Like, why would you not want to go? If you're a star, why would you not want to go play with LeBron in L.A.? Like, you're an instant contender if you get a bona fide star next to him. And look, it might be KD, and if that's the case, they might go to 1920 as the favorite.
It's AD, baby. It's AD. Forget KD.
Well, there's dots to connect there, too, for sure.
Yeah, that's where it's Anthony Davis.
you made a good point there, McMahon. If you consider the moves that they made to set them up for next year as well, if that's included in the voting. I thought interesting that LeBron was voted for the best small forward in the NBA, which he has been for like the last 12 years running. But the percentages are shrinking. He's only at 57% and Durant's at 40%. And
but
as has been
down.
The case. Right. As has been the case
be
in recent. I agree, Jackie. And I question how much LeBron's going to play at small forward because as who is the best power forward in the NBA, LeBron ranks second. So over, as years have gone on, LeBron has started popping up on the best power forward rankings. I think this is the highest he's finished, his second, or at least the highest percentage of votes he's got. He got 33. So Anthony Davis was ranked the best power forward in the NBA. He was also ranked the best center, which is a comment to what Jackie said about AD and his future being. But LeBron was ranked the second best power forward in the NBA, getting 33% of the vote, which means, you know, 10%, 10 of the 30 GMs said LeBron is the best power forward, and the Lakers can't vote for their own guys. So 10 out of 29 said he was the best power forward. The thing about the Lakers, you know, there's more than one way to stretch the floor. When we say stretch the floor, a lot of us think about stretching the floor, horizontally, like from one three-point line to the other. You can stretch the floor vertically by running, which is what the Lakers want to do. And that's definitely something that they're doing in training camp, and you can see it in their games. I will just say I've never seen a LeBron team really run, or I should say LeBron really run. Now, I've seen him run in the preseason before. I've seen him, you know, heard him talk about, as many teams do, we're going to play faster. It's like the 10 pounds of muscle. Everybody comes in and says, we're going to play faster. But when we get into actually the games, November, December, January, I rarely have seen LeBron James want to be on a high-paced team. Now, that doesn't mean that, you know, past results doesn't mean that's going to not be different. And I, you know, running is, I would assume that Jackie knows from covering the NBA for more than 2 years, running is, you know, that's a habit. You nobody sort of runs like halfway. You build the habit. You're either a running team or you're not.
Right.
Whether or not they can keep it up, I don't know. But I mean, I do understand the concept that they're trying to do, which is to stretch the court in a different way than just having shooting, because they're shooting at times, they're not going to have the best shooting team on the court.
I was going to say, they have to run to have success with the point guards. Like Lonzo Ball, what he does best is gets the ball and gets it up the floor. Gets the ball, makes the, you know, 40-foot kick-ahead pass, and boom, they're out in transition. Rondo had his best year since, you know, pre-knee injury in Boston last year with the Pelicans because he got them running and they played at the fastest pace in the league. And those aren't, they're not guys who can really thrive playing without the ball in their hands a lot in the half court because they're not shooters. So if they're going to succeed with those guys, especially playing with LeBron, they better run.
You know what? And if they run, you can get away with that so-called death lineup with LeBron in the middle. Let's say, just for argument's sake, you throw Kuzma, Brandon Ingram, LeBron. Let's say Rondo, because we don't know when Alonzo's come back. Mm-hmm. Let's throw Josh Hart out there. You know, and you run those guys up and down the floor, and then you don't have to worry so much about size, right? I mean, that's just the way the league is going.
I was going to say, if teams want to try to post up big men, like, that's breaking their offense. To me, have at it. Please do that. I would invite you to do that. But I'm not LeBron James who has to, you know, do all that banging down there and then, you know, score 30 points and dish out 10 assists.
So to me, you know, when the Lakers are running, when Lonzo is throwing ahead and LeBron is throwing ahead and JaVale is rim running, I think it looks great. The question to me is when the game slows down and there's pressure on. And I mean, I want to be clear. I think the Lakers are going to be really good. I think the Lakers are going to be a playoff team, which in the West means that they're going to win between 46 and 50 games, which if you win that kind of games, that means you're a good team. I think that they're going to be a bottom four West playoff team, but I think they're going to be a playoff team. But when the games slow down under pressure at the end of close games in the regular season, and certainly the playoffs when there is no running, LeBron doesn't like to play center, which is what they need to have their best lineup on the court. LeBron likes to play point guard. This is one of the things I've been thinking about as people are saying, well, who's going to be the point guard when it matters? Is it going to be Lonzo or is it going to be Rondo? And in fact, last night, and it was because of I don't know if there was an injury or something, but Rondo and Lonzo started last night. At the end of the game, it's not going to be Rondo or Lonzo. It's going to be LeBron. LeBron's going to want to bring the ball up the court. If it's the guy that I know for the last 16 years.
He's been playing point guard for his whole career.
Forever. I know it. Forever. And it's why Kyrie Irving's in Boston, people. Why do you think Kyrie Irving's in Boston?
Yeah.
But the thing about it is, Jackie, is that even though Kyrie didn't like that, Kyrie was more suited to playing next to him because he can shoot.
Right. Because he can shoot
and create.
That's right.
Whereas Lonzo and Rondo cannot. Lonzo and Rondo are great setup men, but they're not. You know, they're not going to be guarded. So that's one of my things with the Lakers.
They're going to clog the space. Their spacing has a chance to be really, really ugly in half court sets.
Right. I mean, I could be
but you know what? Then I'll play along. So don't have either one of those guys out there when the game's down to the stretch. You put LeBron at the point. Call a spade a spade. Put him at the point and surround him with other players and don't have either one of those guys on the floor.
And by the way, he can if he will accept it, he can be a point center. What I mean by that is he's going to be the point in crunch time on offense, but he can guard centers. You know, look,
that's true.
Luka Doncic is going to be the Mavericks' point guard on offense, but they're going to try to have him guard power forwards as often as possible.
I want to talk about Doncic in a second. But
I tell you what though, if you're benching, well, it was the Beijing Duck, so I could probably start four. But he looked good. if you're benching both Justin Hamilton, remember him? He had 29.
Oh,
no,
I do remember him. Yeah, I remember him.
If you're benching both Rondo and LaVar's son for crunch time. I mean, look, Luke Walton's got a lot of things to juggle, and man, that's...
Well, I would argue...
That would be an interesting move.
The LeBron James that I know, and I've kind of got to qualify it because, you know, I guess he could change his game, but the LeBron James that I know, the best guard to play out there alongside him is probably Josh Hart.
Yeah,
because he's a guy who he will space the floor and be a complimentary
player. I told you, that's my
death
lineup.
Want the ball
that's my death lineup. Yeah,
and you know, but they're going to want to have KCP.
But it might be the death of Luke Walton.
Right?
No, yeah, well, I mean, it's all going to be the death of poor Luke Walton. I mean,
we'll talk about the Lakers. We'll talk about the Lakers a lot coming up, but I want to talk about Doncic real quick because the GMs picked Doncic to be Rookie of the Year, and Trae Young did not receive a single vote. As I felt on draft night, and you know, we'll see. I think that trade is going to be one of the things that we keep coming back and talking about in the future. Not only because of Doncic, but because of, we'll see what Trae Young becomes. But Doncic, very highly regarded by GMs. Yet he didn't go one, didn't go two, and the team who had the third pick traded out to not take him. So not everybody was ready to anoint him at that point. But now he's being regarded as the Rookie of the Year leader by the GMs.
I was surprised Marvin Bagley III was tied for second with 17% of the vote. I'm sure that was probably before his preseason debut, not that you want to knee-jerk too much. But look, Doncic is a seasoned vet. I mean, he was the EuroLeague MVP last year. He's been playing pro ball in the second-best league in the world since he was 15 years old and dominated that league last year. So even though he's baby-faced and has some baby fat and the culture's new and all those kind of things. I mean, he comes over. He should be Rookie of the Year because he has such an advantage and experience over the rest of the rookie class. Even guys who are four-year college players, he's got such a significant advantage and experience. And he's a really uniquely skilled guy, being a big, thick, excellent ball handling, unbelievable playmaker. I mean, the vision is really special. And even though his shooting percentages with Real Madrid, especially from three, weren't great. I mean, he was taking a lot of late shot clock, got to get a shot up. The Mavericks feel like he steps into the NBA as an above-average three-point shooter. And, again, it was the Beijing Ducks, but he was 3 of 4 from three-point range the other night, I believe. And one of those was from, 28, 29 feet and just, stepped into it confidently. It's a disappointment if he's not Rookie of the Year, as far as I can see it.
And you know what, Brian, the way that voting goes, so think about it. So if you're in the top three, we know Sacramento's there all the time. And do we really want to dissect Sacramento and all the mistakes they
No.
made? Let's say no. Okay. Yeah. So you're talking about a handful of GMs there. Everybody else, given the choice, would most definitely have taken Doncic. And we knew that beforehand, I feel.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
Well, my understanding is that there was a, go ahead. Sorry to interrupt.
No, it's him.
I was saying there was a split opinion, in Phoenix. The GM won out and over his rookie head coach. But as rookie head coach, my man Igor K, and I'm just calling him K because I mispronounced his last name, coached Doncic in Slovenia, and my understanding is enjoyed coaching him again. There you go. Would have really enjoyed coaching him again in the pros, but I say the GM won. I think the GM and the owner won out on that one.
Well, it will be interesting to see what happens with Trae Young. I like the kid a lot. I spent some time with him. Of course, he actually was very helpful in our mental health series because he's being proactive about getting on top of some of the pressures that he's already faced as a college player and now as a pro player. But just on stature alone, just what they're going to have to ask him to do as opposed to the situation that Doncic is in, I think makes it easier for Doncic to succeed.
Yeah, and look, real quick, the Hawks aren't trying to win this year. I mean, he's in a situation, they're tanking this year. And so, he's going to play a ton of minutes and, you know, take a ton of terrible shots. Yeah, and make a ton of mistakes. And that's what they hope because they want to win, or I should say they want to lose 60 games and get a top three pick and get someone to pair with them. I do think now the shooting is going to be interesting because obviously, you know, at some point there's going to have to be some shot selection conversations about him. But he also has some pretty rare vision. I mean, Trae Young is at least going to be one hell of a passer in the NBA. We'll see about his scoring efficiency.
Just one more thing. Cause let's not just bury poor Marvin Bagley. Okay. It's a little early for that.
I agree.
Okay. All right.
It'll be interesting to compare him and Wendell Carter. Wendell Carter was kind of held back, I think, at Duke by Bagley. But real quick, I want to clarify. I made a mistake earlier. Thanks to Andrew Hahn for pointing this out. Lonzo did not play last night. It was Josh Hart who started. I misspoke.
Yeah, Lonzo's still out with his knee. Yep.
And by the way, Lonzo was the runaway favorite in the GM Rookie of the Year voting last year. Of course, he had some injuries and whatnot. But he got 62% of the vote.
I know you had some Gobert and Jazz takes, but real quick before that, McMahon. Jackie, last year, you know, there was some stories out there. I don't know if anybody wrote this story. Maybe it was just hearing it from coaches, but there was some grumbling when Brad Stevens, amongst his peers, was getting too much attention. In fact, as you can remember, Brad Stevens, I think he got no votes for first place coach of the year.
Right.
Amongst his peers, right? And definitely I can attest to, I have heard grumbling from multiple coaches about why do you guys anoint Brad Stevens, blah, blah, blah. I mean, you know, I don't think they dislike him as a guy. I just think that they, for some reason within the coaching community, there's a feeling that Brad Stevens, you know, gets, you know, kid glove treatment. But here in the GM survey, who is the best coach in the NBA? Number one, 47% of the vote, Brad Stevens.
Okay. So now you know
how do you explain
why all
that?
The coaches are grumbling. I'm going to tell you. Now you know why all the coaches are grumbling because their boss thinks Brad Stevens is better. That's why. Think about it.
Yeah, but it's not like he'll be on the market anytime soon.
No, but it's like, why can't you be more like Brad Stevens? No, I mean,
yeah, but that's fascinating, I think.
It is fascinating. And I feel bad for Brad Stevens because, I mean, I'm around this guy every day. He never says anything about himself. Ever.
That's true.
I mean, ever. Go back and look. I dare anyone to find a boastful quote from this guy. He has done everything he can to be respectful of his elders, to remain under the radar. You know, whenever someone says a compliment, he's like, well, that I couldn't possibly, you know, Popovich is always effusive in his praise, for instance, of Brad. He has not asked for this. This is us, the media, that have done this. And we've done it, I think, with good reason, because we hear from opposing players talk about how difficult their schemes are, about how many plays they run. We know that out of bounds, you know, all the statistics from the out of bounds plays.
After timeout.
And so, so we have some, you know, we actually have some meat behind us. So, and it's, you know, coaches, NBA coaches are funny to me. And I like so many of them. But they're like little kids, you know. Pick me, pick me, pick me. because out of all the realm of the NBA, the NBA coach's job remains the most thankless. There's no doubt about that.
And the most precarious.
It pays fairly well, though.
It yep, does.
It does.
It does. A lot of these guys, there's like this cycle. They get a job, they feel okay about it for about a year and a half, and then they start worrying about either getting fired, their next job, or getting extended. They're all, there's very few, you know, periods of quiescence, you know, calm moments. Popovich finished second, got 30% of the vote, but, you know, Brad Stevens got a significant percentage more than Pop, and then D'Antoni and Kerr, third. Also getting votes, Quinn Snyder in Utah. McMahon, what were you thinking? You were saying something about Gobert surprised you. He finished at the top of a bunch of categories.
You just skipped right over Rick Carlisle and Terry Stotts also getting votes. My goodness, you're a hater.
Yeah, okay.
By the way, Brad Stevens, I do think it's kind of hard to argue much against him when they go to Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Finals with two max players out with injuries. Now, having said that, if they don't win the East this year, the Celtics will be seen as underachievers. But no, Gobert is one of these guys, like if you go through Gobert's likes on Twitter, the majority of them are going to be insulting to him. Like he's definitely a guy who loves, you know, being, the perception of, you know, well, I'm disrespected. And there's four things on here that he will definitely take as major signs of disrespect. The first.
He finished at the top of a couple categories, but go ahead.
And I'll get to those. The first is the fact that Oklahoma City's picked to finish in front of them in the West, despite the fact that they beat OKC in six in the first round. He'll definitely consider that to be disrespectful. The hugest sign of disrespect for him will be the best center votings. Anthony Davis, Joel Embiid, Karl Anthony Towns, also receiving votes, the Greek Freak who doesn't play center, Boogie Cousins, Andre Drummond, Mark Gasol, Al Horford, Nikola Jokic. He didn't get a single vote. That he will, because he thinks he's the best.
Embiid's going to be pissed he didn't finish first there.
Oh, Embiid, that's why we love Embiid. He's mad about everything. God, bring it on.
Yes.
I can't wait.
And yeah, and Gobert's the same way, because the other two things he'll be mad about or are the voting. The best defense player in the NBA. He tied with Kawhi Leonard with 37% of the vote. He'll be pissed about that because 37% tied with, you know, I'm telling you. And then the best interior defender. I'm just telling you, this is how he is, and this is how he motivates himself. I mean, the man wears 27 as a jersey number because that's where he's picked in the draft. He's been pissed off about that since the day of the draft. But I'm telling you, Rudy Gobert will be pissed off when he looks at best interior defender and sees the voting. Rudy Gobert, number one, 80%. He will be livid that that wasn't unanimous.
Oh, for crying out loud.
By the way,
my goodness.
Who the hell voted Dwight? Who gave Dwight Howard a vote in that in 2018? But anyways.
Wow.
No, that is. You know what's funny? It's funny. I had to do a 5-on-5. You guys know our 5-on-5s. I think it's running. Mm-hmm. What's today? I don't know. It's running today.
I hope it's running today, Jackie, because I was talking about preseason games for Monday and Tuesday. Sunday and Monday. And then,
So you did it as well. And one of the things they asked us about was the most underrated team and like who's not getting enough credit. And I said the Bucks. And I said that in part because I'm a big fan of Mike Budenholzer. I think he's just a really, really great coach. And I said in my 5-on-5, and I mean it, don't be surprised if Giannis elevates to be one of the great defensive players in this league. I think he'll be a candidate for defensive player of the year with Bud at his side. I really do. Because he has that kind of potential defensively.
Giannis ranked fourth in our NBA rank, tied allegedly with Kevin Durant. So
we don't have enough time to go through that again.
Let me just say this. Durant's whine about, you know, the hate, blah, 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 when asked about defense player of the year. He didn't try on defense for most of last season. Does he have the talent to be a great defensive player? Yes, but the Warriors were very mediocre with him on the floor defensively and pretty damn good without him. So it's like,
KD, his numbers didn't bear it.
You definitely have the ability to be a great defensive player, but you have to actually put effort to feel like you know, the reason you didn't win that award is because you didn't give a crap about defense throughout the regular season.
Well, one of the things that is a constant source of frustration for players, but the media, the people who are competitive for the awards, whether it's fair or not, their candidacies are framed by the way they play in October, November, and December. By Christmas, generally the award voters have an idea of who their top three is on every ballot. And this is one of the things about LeBron. You know, LeBron did not play his best basketball the first couple of months of last season. Now, the last 3 months, he was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And he wanted you to kind of forget about those. And I think the same thing with other players. And maybe it's not fair to count the early part of the season so much when it matters later, but generally the voters do care about all 82 and not
they
the playoff
should.
Games. Yeah. And so what I would say to anybody who's frustrated about awards is, and you know, this is one of the reasons why I think LeBron may end up being a Vogue MVP candidate again this year, is because he's going to have to play great for the Lakers to be a good team. Yeah. Not that he didn't have to for the Cavs, but it's really going to be the case for the Lakers in the West. And so even if the Lakers only get 46 wins or so, 45 wins, if LeBron's a big factor in a lot of those games, he'll have a chance to win it. Even though he was a big factor in a lot of wins for the Cavs last year and they had 50 wins, it was just viewed a little bit differently. But all right, well,
but
thank you,
know why,
you
Brian,
for...
Though?
Go ahead.
Well, just,
no, go
I want to just say one more thing about that, though, because
yes.
I'm one of these voters you're talking about. I vote for these awards, and I know you don't, because on principle.
No,
but
I do.
I will tell you...
I do vote.
Oh, you do?
I do vote.
I thought you said you wouldn't.
I don't, because nobody gives a crap about me. But
I have other things I don't
true,
do.
Tim,
on,
we love
I don't
you.
Do...
Okay.
I don't do predictions on principle, but I do vote for you.
You predicted the Lakers would be a playoff team.
But here's one of the things I want to just say about LeBron, because I thought long and hard about this. I mean, LeBron, you could make obviously a case for MVP every year. But I heard a lot of people say, maybe even you, Brian, that last year was LeBron's greatest accomplishment. And the reason I push back on that is because LeBron quit on his team early in the season when things were going wrong. And I haven't seen LeBron quit too many times in his life. And it bothered me that everybody forgot about that. Because he was part of the problem. Now, he ended up being the solution, as he always does. But you cannot exonerate him for that train wreck the first 3 months because he was up to his neck in it.
In January,
well, his energy level before
January
and after
especially.
The trades. Yeah. It, I mean,
but see, I'm sorry.
See,
so that, like,
you
I mean,
see
and I can. Right. And I can argue all so many other seasons where LeBron, start to finish, was just dominant and deserved that award and didn't get it. But last year was not one of those years.
Well, his playoff performance was among
amazing.
The greatest of his career. And that's,
yes,
oh, for sure.
I can't say for sure. But that's not what I think I was referring to.
Okay, but that's I just want to be on the record as pointing that out.
No, that's fine. And the thing that I have said, and I actually got a lot of flack from people in Boston about this. I mean,
you're not well liked here, Brian. I love you, but you're right. You're not well liked in general here.
The Cavs winning that Eastern title last year, it's not the level of the championships because of the nature of that they are championships, but it's just one below that. Like, of the accomplishments on his career, I do think it's the three championships and then winning the East last year. And that rubs some people the wrong way, but I think you have to understand what he went through to pull that team through the East, and you know, to win 2 7-game series, to win a game 7 on the road. Yes,
right,
I realize
right.
that the Celtics were without two of their best players, but nonetheless, to him to pull that out on the road, he had 2 buzzer-beating game winners in the East playoffs last year. That performance in those 3 rounds, and he also had a great game 1 until he fractured his hand, and then all of a sudden, his performance peeled back after that.
All right, now I'm going to be a real dink. But are we sure that he fractured his hand? Because I never saw his hand in a cast. I mean, he hurt his hand. And see, this is where, I thought LeBron, everything you said up until then, I agree with 1,000%. His postseason performance was nothing short of incredible. And I was there for a front row seat as you were. I saw it. And never mind that the Celtics do players down. You play who's put in front of you. You perform against who's put in front of you. And he was otherworldly. And then the hand thing happens, and then at the end he shows up with that thing on, and that I'm just like, well, why do you do that? Why do you do that? If you're hurt and you're playing hurt, then play hurt and finish it out that way. And this is where LeBron loses people. Do you understand?
Well, I would say the argument with plausible deniability, I'm not saying I buy it, but the we didn't want the Warriors to know because we didn't want to give them the advantage. That's the argument. I'm not saying I buy it. I'm just putting it out there
because I believe in complete fairness. I would never be unfair to anybody, and so I'm just presenting.
I don't
it.
Know.
And
yeah, I don't
want
know
Wendy
how
to have to do it because he's got a rep for being a LeBron. Smoocher,
so that could,
even though
that's all
totally
fine, but
inaccurate.
All right, so let's go along with that. Let's say that his hand was fractured or hurt or what. It was definitely hurt. Obviously, he hurt it, no question. So if that's the way you want to be, you just want to gut it out and keep playing till the finish, because that's what gamers do, that's what ballers do, then don't go up on the podium with that thing on your hand. Just go off and tell us 3 weeks later. That's where you lose us. Up till then, I'm all with you. But when you start, it reminded me of Paul Pierce way back in the day when he wrapped his chin in that ridiculous thing when he got hit.
Oh, my God. Just, you know what? Yeah. You're right. You're right.
Yeah.
I think, so here's just to give you a timeline of what happened. We had heard rumors that LeBron had hurt his hand punching a blackboard in Golden State in game one, and we couldn't get them confirmed. Could we have crawled across the glass and tried to get it confirmed a little harder? I suppose. I mean, but we couldn't get it confirmed. And so then after game four, when it was over, after LeBron's, LeBron was in the locker room, then I was able to get it confirmed. People weren't worried about keeping it a secret anymore. It wasn't that, all of a sudden they was like, well, they lost 4-0, let's find an excuse. But I was able to get it confirmed, something that I had been looking into for several days, okay? So I go report it on television. I think some other people found out as well. Mm-hmm. And once it was out there, then LeBron played it up and wrapped the hand. And that, I was really upset seeing that, because then it made it look like there was some conspiracy of which I was a part of, which in the reality I've been trying to get the information for a couple of days, and people weren't willing to give it up. You know, trust me, right. It was not easy to confirm that J.R. Smith threw soup either. They weren't crazy about that story becoming public. It took like 48 hours to get that confirmed. And because it wasn't, playoff implications,
can I give you an example and then we can stop? But this is a really old example, but it's one I will never, ever, ever forget. In 1987, and I know this is a long time ago, the Celtics lose to the Lakers. The Lakers win, junior hook. It's Irvin Johnson's time. It's the Lakers' time. They were the better team. As we know now, Kevin McHale played in that series with a broken foot. They told him to stop playing because the space in his foot was getting bigger and bigger and bigger. He decided to take that sucker up and play. When they lost in that series, after the game, he did not mention his foot. He did not talk about, well, I just played on a broken. He did none of that. 2 days later, when he met with us, he said, well, now I guess I can finally put my foot up and admit it hurts like hell. That's how you handle it. That's how you handle it.
I agree. I don't think that – I think the way LeBron handled that was not the best. But I will say the one thing that LeBron has to deal with that McHale didn't, and fair or not, whether this is a comparable or not, is that LeBron's legacy is evaluated every 15 minutes, especially during the playoffs.
Yeah,
and maybe he shouldn't. Maybe he shouldn't care about that. Maybe it shouldn't. Maybe it shouldn't matter. And McHale was a player when men were men, etc. Maybe it is generational, what have you. But I do think that that is a factor that not even like Jordan. You know, Jordan didn't. I mean, I don't. Maybe I'm wrong. I wasn't working in the media at the time, but I don't think people were evaluating his legacy, you know, game by game. So that's
right.
Well, and it wasn't a 24-hour conversation. There wasn't this social media fishbowl and all that. You know, it wasn't a 24-hour coverage of everything.
But let me just, so let's play along. If he never did what he did, if he never wrapped that hand, nobody, I defy you to find anybody that would have said LeBron James had failed. Nobody believed that. It was, he didn't belong, his team didn't belong in the finals.
That's
he
right.
did everything he could. Nobody would have said, I just don't think anybody would have, Brian. I just don't.
I agree. I think it was, his hand was hurting. I don't know how bad it was. His numbers came down, but he certainly played, one game. I think
heroic.
He played like 47 minutes.
It was heroic. Nobody was questioning did LeBron give Cleveland enough? Nobody. So that's why he didn't need to do that.
I agree. Although I do think it's interesting that the criticism he received then and since was that he played up the injury by wrapping his hand and not the fact that he hurt his team by punching a blackboard stupidly, which I think is a fair thing to say.
Point. Yeah.
What the hell were you doing, injuring yourself? Like, frankly, him punching a blackboard and hurting his hand and limiting himself for the next three games of the finals, you could argue was worse than J.R. Smith forgetting the score.
No, first of all, J.R. Smith forgetting the score is perfect reason to punch a blackboard. That's a cause and effect thing. And as a guy who played That's the majority great. Of my senior year with a broken hand because I punched a door, I take you correlating that to a lack of intelligence very personally, and I'm not going to stand for that.
Well, I think he learned it from Pat Riley. Remember? Pat Riley punched the... Remember? Pat Riley broke his hand doing that.
Didn't,
in one of his fiery
what's
speeches.
The bird yeah. broken hand story, Jackie?
Well, that's a fight in a bar. That's completely different. That's a different kettle of fish.
Who among us hasn't been in a fight in a bar? What was that, Andrew?
I have not. My hand is raised.
I have not in a long time.
I was making a veiled political reference. What was that, Andrew Hunt?
Oh, hey.
I have two quick non sequiturs. One, the move of the pod is Tim McMahon interrupting Jackie, apologizing for interrupting Jackie, and then telling Jackie to go ahead, but before she can speak, he just keeps talking. And number two, we're out of time.
Okay.
Yeah, I got to go.
Thank you.
Hey, guys.
Thank you.
I am sorry, Jackie.
I'm not least offended. I interrupted Brian. I just did it again. Sorry, Brian. I love you, too.
That's okay.
I do.
Tim, enjoy Applebee's. In Shanghai. Jackie, have a wonderful week. Have a wonderful week. Thank you, Andrew Hahn. Thank you, everyone, for listening. We'll be back next week.